On the program today, we discuss the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, a documentary on the acceptance or lack thereof of intelligent design in the academic community. All this and more ahead on the Reformed Media Review. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. This is episode number 21. My name is Camden Busey. I have with me today Jared Oliphant, who is Director of Admissions at Westminster Theological Seminary in Glenside.
Very nice.
Pennsylvania. How are you doing, Jared?
I'm doing well, Camden.
Thank you for coming over. This is going to be a fun discussion because we have our good friend Jonathan Brack with us, who is admissions counselor also at Westminster Theological Seminary. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, today we're going to be continuing our discussion of several movies. A while ago, we talked about Collision, which is a documentary of the series of debates between Douglas Wilson and Christopher Hitchens. Last episode, we talked about Avatar, the new movie from James Cameron, and about all the themes therein and all the issues and subjects. And one of those themes was dealing with the subject of science. Mm-hmm. And that brings us today to our documentary, the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, which is done by and starring, in a sense, Ben Stein. Now, Jared, you're going to kind of lead our discussion today. And I see you've got the notes and the outline. So I'll kick it over to you. Why did you want to speak about Expelled, and why do you think it's a movie worth talking about?
Yeah, the origin of this was, it was really a light suggestion, but the more I got into it, or the more I started thinking about it, I thought there was a lot of different avenues that we could go down in terms of just content of the movie. And Ben Stein is definitely a fascinating guy. He was a speechwriter for Nixon way back in the day. And of course, you remember from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he's been, you know, he's a teacher in the Wonder Years. And so
the Visine guy.
Yeah, the Visine guy. He's been on a number
of Ben Stein's money. He's like a genius of trivia.
Right, right. So he wears a lot of different hats, including acting, which is interesting. And it just, I didn't know that he was involved in these kinds of discussions at all. It doesn't surprise me, but it was something that I just didn't know about. So the documentary was actually suggested to me by Paste Magazine. I don't know if you are familiar with that at all.
No, I'm not.
It's a magazine that's really, really good, actually. It just examines our culture and how you think about different elements of it critically. So it has book reviews, music reviews, movie reviews, and really does it from a critical aspect. Not really Christian exactly, but just examines
critical.
A little bit. Yeah, critical. Examines it deeper. So they pointed me to it, so I checked it out. I basically just wanted to bring it up to go through the whole topic of intelligent design from a Reformed perspective and see what we could mine from the different people that they interviewed and also the different subjects that they tackled. They're really Ben Stein tackled.
Mm-hmm. So intelligent design, what actually is intelligent design? And is it that intelligent?
Yeah, it deals with, I mean, it, you know, the title is kind of self-explanatory, but it deals with the origins of life and what we observe. I should say it's a trans-religious view. So it's not tied to Christianity or Judaism.
Right. Stein's a Jew.
Yeah, Ben Stein is Jewish.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely not a necessarily a Christian perspective. So we should say that up front. But it basically just says that when you look at the scientific data, the conclusion that you reach is that this had to have been designed and purposed, that things are not here just by accident, and it's not all just chaos and chance. And so that's really the starting premise. Those are the two competing, not worldviews, but conclusions of scientific data that you can reach. It's either ordered or it's chaos, and they go with ordered.
Now, sometimes we hear about the term irreducible complexity. Is that just one element or aspect of intelligent design?
I think so. I mean, you may have more to say on that.
But I don't. I just know that we look at certain elements of a cell, and we could say that they are irreducibly complex. They could not have come from a series of incremental improvements or mutations. Like the eye, for instance. The human eye, it either works or it doesn't work.
Yeah,
and so many of the intelligent design proponents will look to different elements of biology and say, These are irreducibly complex and therefore cannot be explained. It doesn't necessarily prove the Christian religion. That's not what we're saying. But mm-hmm. what we are saying is that they cannot be explained by a Darwinian framework, by a Darwinian system.
Right. And that argument was made popular by Michael Behe, who wrote Darwin's Black Box.
Actually, yes, he was made popular. Correct.
Right.
I'm forgetting the philosopher, but it was it Paley? William Paley. A long time ago, a couple centuries ago, made this argument, which is, I believe, what Hume interacted with. I might be wrong, but a philosopher of that era interacted with, I believe it was William Paley made an intelligent design argument. Maybe not irreducible complexity, but he was the one who talked about the watch you find on like the shores of the beach.
Right. Yeah, you're correct.
Uh-huh. And you look at something and you say there must have been a designer for this. Mm-hmm. The argument is old in terms of the modern era.
Or the garden analogy, right? If you go into a garden and it's all perfectly ordered, well, there must be a gardener. That's another analog of the argument.
Behe's argument is more like if you're walking in a garden and all of a sudden, hanging from the tree, you see a noose, right? Or you see some sort of trap. And you're like, oh, that's strange that just over a million years, there's this trap that I put my foot in it. It's going to just yank up and all of a sudden,
Right, exactly.
I'm going to go up in the tree. And that has evolved over millions of years.
Yeah.
You
look at something like that, and what they're arguing for, basically, obviously, is that nature begs the existence or presupposes the existence of a designer because of certain elements and aspects.
Right. Yeah. So he kind of just ups the level there.
If that's intelligent design, what is the purpose of expelled? Why do we have the subtitle No Intelligence Allowed? And what really is the goal or thrust of this particular film?
Yeah. To start at the beginning, and I won't belabor any points here, but just to go through it, he starts
belabor.
Yeah.
You could fast forward if you don't like it.
Yeah, hit the edit button. He starts out with, it's funny, he starts out with kind of propaganda imagery of like Nazi Germany, literally. And again, this is coming from a Jewish guy. But he does that for a reason, and the reason is that he equates the current scientific climate with kind of almost, parallel to the Nazi regime in that they don't allow intelligent design on any level, even a discussion of it. I mean, you are just anathematized in the scientific community if you even entertain that it may even be an option. Right. So he starts out and he...
Freedom of inquiry,
right. Yeah. Freedom is really what he starts off as. Yeah. America is a country of freedom. We should be allowed to express our scientific beliefs, etc. So he starts out and he goes through different figures and talks about different figures who have basically lost their jobs over not even espousing intelligent design, but entertaining it as an option among others.
Yeah.
So it's a very soft view of intelligent design. And then goes on and talks about the details a little bit later and what's involved with equating it with Christianity and how that's invalid, how it's a little bit broader, like we said. And then just the detailed scientific arguments for it.
Yeah. I don't want to derail us, but I would like to say with any movie like this, you should always take everything with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I disagree. I really enjoyed this movie, and I did agree with where it was going and the things that it said.
Mm-hmm.
But, let's flip the turn the tables. You watch a Michael Moore film, you better watch it with take everything with a grain of salt as well.
Right.
The same goes for this movie. So, yes, I mean, they certainly have an agenda, and they're certainly going to present employer-employee relations in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and they certainly have a desire to say this guy was simply let go or fired only mm-hmm. because he was asking a question.
Right, right.
So I, whether or not that's true, that's something to decide, given the evidence and the facts and whatnot. But certainly there is a lack of freedom of inquiry in today's scientific society. And one question I have for you, Jared, and also Jonathan, why should we have the freedom of inquiry on intelligent design? Do we provide the freedom of inquiry to the people, or do we provide a platform for people to speak about a flat earth anymore? That's one of the arguments labeled in there, or a solar system in which the sun revolves around the earth. What about those sorts of things? Do we provide them academic positions, people who hold those views?
I would say we would provide them an academic position if they can hold that in a critical position. In other words, they can go toe to toe with the scientists as far as the conclusions that they're and the observations, you know, all the scientific data that they gather. If they can do the science just as well, but they come to a conclusion that's different, then yeah, they should be able to hold a position and teach science. But I don't think anybody can do that and hold to a flat earth view. Mm-hmm. So,
and the reason is there needs to be, and a couple of people make this point, but there needs to be, it needs to be distinguished between just quote unquote pure science. And then when you're dealing with metaphysical arguments, So a lot of this touches on origins rather than post-origin scientific data. Yeah. So something like flat Earth, we have, you know, quote unquote, objectifiable data on that. That's
fine. We've seen it.
Yeah. But when you're talking about the design of what's out there, no one can point to something and say, see, there's the design or there's the lack of design. These are metaphysical and we would say theological theories that are out there that are competing that need to be dealt with on that level that bring science into the picture but are not only scientific.
Yeah, and that's really where Darwinism really steps outside the bounds of what science is all about in a sense. Whenever he starts to extrapolate and philosophize and try to come up and make metaphysical claims outside the bounds of experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
He's stepped outside the bounds of science, at least in any Baconian sense.
Huh? Right. Yeah. Well, and he deals with, you know, his book, it's the origins of species. It's not the origins of life. So one of the themes that develops throughout this movie is, all right, well, once species exist, where did they come from? How did life originate from absolute non-life, which is what they claim? And
the experiment that demonstrates that?
Exactly. In no lab can you take, you know, complete non-life and bring life into it. So that's one of the things that
Ben
Stein,
Frankenstein's
right, yeah, which everyone knows is scientifically valid, but no, but that's one thing that Stein really does go to bat for. There's a figure in there. His name is David Berlinski. I had to write this down because I had not heard of him before, but he was an impressive figure intellectually. One of the questions that was posed to him was, all right, if Darwin's idea of the cell in terms of its complexity is equated to a Cadillac, then what is our concept now of the cell? And he said, it's a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, his point there is we know just, you know, exponentially more about the cell now.
And it hasn't gotten easier.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the thing that Darwin says just kind of evolved or by chance happened, that's something that, you know, no one in their right mind would say just kind of happenstance evolved or came to be.
Right, right. Now, the opposite side of that would be, well, you have millions or billions and billions of years of time in order for that to come about, and you have... It just so happened that only certain chemical reactions can take place and those sorts of things. So couldn't macroevolution have happened? Hasn't there been enough time for it to happen?
Right. And that's the argument. And Stein addresses that as well, because that's a big counter argument. He goes through the odds of that happening. And it's, you know, I forget the number, but it's something like, whatever it is, 200 different lottery machines going off in the same pattern at the sequentially or something. Yeah. It's basically zero. The odds are basically zero mathematically.
Yeah.
So the answer to that is really no.
Right. Or if we're going to be objective and scientific, mathematically would say it's highly improbable.
Highly improbable. Jonathan, let me
like
ask.
Dawkins says it's highly improbable that God exists. Well,
Any person who is sane and not stupid, he literally says that. Right. If you're sane and not stupid, you believe in evolution.
Mm.
So,
now, what about the apologetic value of this so far? Because whenever we start talking probabilities, the reformed apologists should start to get a little uneasy and upset. And,
and I think they should.
Why is that? Why is probability not a good apologetic practice? And two, is intelligent design all about apologetics, or is it really trying to get at something else? That's not a leading question. Right. But you were speaking about earlier
begging
today.
The question. Just kidding. Yeah, I think, you know, your apologetics intent should start. It should go up at that moment, and as soon as you hear that sort of thing, simply because there's a sense of neutrality that is assumed,
right,
in these conversations, where it's like, you know, everybody can do science all the same, and if we all look at the data, then we can all come to the same conclusion. That's not true according to scripture.
Mm-hmm.
What else was I going to say about that?
To piggyback on that, I think what I was thinking during this was that, and apologies because, you know, I had a philosophy undergrad, but I equate a lot of these things to Plantinga and his arguments and basically saying, all right, Christianity should have a seat at the table.
Yeah.
It is, and we can go into how effective he is and how reformed he is, but it is just as quote unquote intellectual as you want to define that with other philosophers as any other philosophy that's out there. And I think that's kind of a similar argument that Ben Stein is making. He's not saying intelligent design is hard, you know, just fact, concrete scientific data, but he's saying it should at least have a seat at the table among other scientific theories. So he's doing, I think the scientific community needs to catch up with philosophy and what Plantinga has done since really like the 60s, and saying, guys, you need to take another look at this and examine your own assumptions when you come to the scientific table and the philosophical table.
Yeah. Now, let me say, intelligent design is kind of like theism, not even theism,
right,
but let's say theism, LCD theism, lowest common denominator.
Right.
And is there any place for that, or is there any value for that for the Christian apologist?
I mean, yes and no, but more so no.
Really?
In an apologetics discussion. Simply because,
in apologetics.
Right.
Now, you're talking about use in a context.
Right.
Okay.
Because simply, if, say, the conversation goes just very, very well, and at the end of the day, Richard Dawkins says, you're exactly right, you know.
Right.
It was an intelligent designer.
The flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah, and you would say, and he's still on his route to hell. And so, and according to Jesus, according to John 5, he's still an unbeliever.
Right? Yes.
The unbelievers.
So if you use intelligent design strictly as an apologetic tool, and you even win a debate,
right,
and he agrees with what you've said in intelligent design, what is he? He's an agnostic at best.
Right. Or he's still an unbeliever.
He's an unbeliever.
He's still determining the truth of the whole world based on his own brain and brawn, which is autonomous reasoning.
Now, what value might there be?
I think if you look at a totally different context, which is what is taught in public schools or really any schools, I think what's helpful about this is saying, all right, this subject for a number of decades has not been tackled in the way that I think Ben Stein wants it to be tackled, on a philosophical and really, like I said, like a level playing field. So taking another look at what has been just completely assumed, which is Darwin's theory of evolution, I think is very helpful. And based on their own theories of science and their own philosophy of science, Stein is basically saying, look, in public schools, this is not exactly a religious point of view, because that couldn't fit with public schools, and we have to deal with the limits of our government. I think that's fine. But making it have an equal place, really, among other theories in public schools, and really just kind of broadening their scope when they teach certain scientific subjects.
So that's more or less what the agenda is. And so what we're saying is you really shouldn't try to make more out of intelligent design or use it as a tool in an area that maybe it's not intending to be used.
Right.
And Jared, you and I have talked before about Alvin Plantinga's philosophy, and you mentioned mm-hmm. it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes he gets overly criticized
mm-hmm.
In his epistemological views, but he wasn't ever intending to provide an entire epistemological system. Right.
Right.
What happens sometimes in these cases with intelligent design, with Alvin Plantinga, is critics try to ascribe more value or more more power to somebody's view than what they had even intended for.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And so maybe with intelligent design, the goal isn't necessary to provide an entire Christian apologetic.
That's right.
It's not. And so for some people to look at it and say, look, this doesn't prove Christianity. This is worthless.
Uh-huh.
That's not a really good thing to say, because intelligent design is strictly a tool. It's a point, an argument used in public schools. It's used in other areas in order to kind of provide a platform or to provide opportunity for discussion.
Yeah.
In order to be modestly critical of the dominant worldview and the dominant system that's out there. It's not designed in order to be a lockdown, drag-out argument for, you know, the Christianity of the Bible.
Yeah, right. If you qualify things and say, based on your own worldview and based on your own assumptions, this should also be a valid perspective, I think you're okay.
Yeah.
I would say that for apologetics, it would be helpful to say something to the effect of, this is obvious the way the world is. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you almost have a clash even there. If you convert somebody over into intelligent design, the next thing that you should say is, and this is obviously the way the world is. And the only way there can be an intelligent designer is if the intelligent designer can be the God of the Bible.
That's right. Right. Yeah.
So you end up with kind of like a cumulative case,
mm-hmm.
you know, this chain kind of argument, something that C.S. Lewis would propose. But
or just a broader point of contact. You know,
it can be a very helpful point of contact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really Ben Stein's agenda, to provide a place at the table to procure or at least retain the freedom of inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he's going with this film. So how does he go about trying to establish this, or at least trying to argue for the right to discuss this in an academic setting?
Yeah, I mean, his method, like I said before, is he... and by the way, I should also clarify, some parts of this film are admittedly a little bit cheesy. You know, he throws in cartoons to illustrate it, and that's fine, and that can be helpful, I guess, but it's... some of the production value
stuff
isn't the highest.
I mean,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, some of the sentiment's the same.
Right.
The idea, you know, but... You and I think we agree. There's some. I still can't put my finger on a proper term, but it's elementary. It's a crude term, but it's cheap.
Yeah,
some of it's cheap.
If you go into it thinking, all right, Ben Stein probably his target audience was most likely a upper level high school science class, where he wanted to communicate these things to them. Then you're not going to be disappointed with the lack of intellectual rigor that is absent from the film, or present in the film. But his method basically is, like I said, he introduces some figures who are in the scientific community who are opposed to the people who are vehemently against intellectual design, such as Dawkins, such as Hitchens, and other people that he interviews. And just goes through their... both their experiences in the scientific world and their academic positions and how they've been treated, and then goes into the specific arguments that we've been talking about just now. I think it's he wouldn't say this, but in my mind, and again, this is philosophy, but he's almost battling Kant here in saying that you shouldn't think about everything as just noumenal phenomenal. And that your, you know, observation is really the only thing that we can know. And all the God and design questions, those are out there, and you can kind of play with that if you want, but we can never really know those things. I saw him tackling this probably without really even knowing that he's doing so.
Mm.
And Jonathan's nodding his head in agreement, probably because he was also a philosophy major, so I don't know how relevant this is.
I think you're exactly right, is that Ben Stein was, he was wrestling with the issue throughout the whole movie is, does the scientific classroom have a place to ask these questions? Because it seems as if science and observation is constantly butting up to, and the data is forcing us to butt up against these questions, which is, well, where did this come from the beginning, from the first place?
Yeah.
And what's going to happen? Why is this the case that this happens the way it happens?
Mm-hmm. And even they get to, down to the nitty gritty of, okay, you know, you've got this evolutionary framework, but where did matter come from? I mean, they try to answer the question of origins, but they can't answer the question of the origin of matter.
That's exactly right. And that's where the rubber hits the road. It's, you know, a couple scientists say, if you go with a weak definition of evolution, every scientist agrees with that. Evolution just being that
microevolution.
Well, you know, change happens over time. Yeah. Everyone acknowledges that. Change,
natural selection on a micro scale.
Yeah, right, exactly. But when you deal with the origins question, that's really where the anti-intelligent design people are guessing, quote-unquote, just as much as the intelligent design people are.
Yeah, one of the most fascinating conversations we had in philosophy of science was when we read an article where a scientist was actually trying to describe the expansion of the universe and from space into hyperspace. And you follow, you know, you're reading along, you're like, oh, that's fascinating about how that could be the case. But then, you know, the philosophy professor just asked, you know, one simple question, what is hyperspace? And everybody's like, oh, I don't know. It's big space.
It's the thing that the Millennium Falcon can go into.
Right. And this is and then at the end of the
space with too much coffee.
Right. At the end of the conversation, the philosopher is like, it's obvious that this guy is not in his own field here.
Mm-hmm.
He's losing words. He's creating words. Hyperspace. It's just you know, so.
And that's a good point. The reason why I found this so interesting is not necessarily because it was such a penetrating argument against, you know, evolution, but more of just an exposure to the different issues that you'll come up against if you deal with the issue of intelligence design. That's all, really. It's a nice foray into the subject, I guess.
Yeah. So who are some of the other people that he interviewed and some of the other things that he talked about?
A lot of these people, to be honest, I hadn't heard of. I wrote down a few names. One guy, there's a guy by the name of, I think, Dr. Daniel Dennett.
Daniel Dennett's one of the new atheists. He's one of the big names.
He is.
That gets mentioned alongside Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens.
Right, exactly. He did a TED Talk a few years ago.
Oh, I love TED Talks.
TED Talks are amazing. Do you want to explain just so...
Well, TED is a conference that's done every year, and they franchised it now, so they have several TEDx conference. But if I believe it's just TED.org, or if you do a search for TED, I'm sure it's one of the first things that'll come up on Google.
It says for technology, engineering, and design.
Entertainment design.
Yeah, right? But it's, they bring industry leaders in and talk about things that Jonathan just mentioned, and they bring in big questions. The cool thing is they ask the big questions and they give a great presentation usually about their question, trying to provide a solution. And the conference is a bunch of the world's best minds or the industry leaders that come together to try to tackle big things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why you might want to watch. I mean, if you're an intelligent person who wants to, you know, think about the really difficult problems, you know, the issues that impact our country, that impact our life day to day, and you want to hear industry leading people speak about them, TED is a place to go. If you are just a fan of communication or like rhetoric and just want to see a good presenter, someone speak, more often than not, you're going to find an excellent presenter because they only select the best. Now, my wife and I have seen a few bombs on TED.
Yeah,
they exist. A few in which I've said, this is not worthy of a TED Talk.
So the standard is the highest you can get in terms of presentation.
They are. Yeah. I mean, they're up there with the Steve Jobs Apple keynote speech.
That's right.
They are the world's best pitch.
Uh-huh.
But they're intelligent. It's not phony baloney. Another that I've just found, a website that is similar, is Fora or Fora.tv, which has a lot of things like this on there. So I watched I watched an interview with Noam Chomsky last night.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. But they have a bunch of fun stuff on there. But that's what TED is. So
anyway, yeah, all that is to say, I saw him do a talk, and it was obviously coming from a anti-theist perspective. But he's one of the figures on there. We mentioned Dawkins, we mentioned Hitchens. Those are really the gurus of the new atheism.
The bestsellers.
Yeah,
the new atheism that has old arguments.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I know. Not new
arguments. It's just a bunch of crybabies.
Yeah. Or ad hominem arguments.
No, we should mention that Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins have prominent roles, but Dawkins especially in this film.
Uh-huh.
Expelled features Dawkins quite a bit.
Yeah,
he's one of the main features of the opposition.
Yeah, and we should, if you watch this and if you watch Collision within a certain, you know, within a month or within a couple of weeks, you'll see a lot of the same arguments.
Yeah.
You'll see a lot of parallels. And so it's worthwhile checking both of those things out.
I wanted more Hitchens, but I realized he's not a scientist, so I know that's why he didn't appear in there. And it seemed like they just threw him in because he's a big name in atheism.
Right.
And I thought that kind of tipped the hat a little bit towards what some of the agenda in the movie actually was.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't strictly about science or strictly about intelligent design, because just by the fact of including Hitchens seemed to say to me, well,
uh-huh.
You know, it's becoming a little more obvious what the real goal of this is.
Yeah, and that the
and
guy,
that's some of the thing that some of the evolutionists, the Darwinians, were arguing about. Right?
Yeah.
They said, no, intelligent design isn't this desire for freedom. It's really a religious agenda. They
exactly.
just want to get the Bible taught in public schools.
Yeah, yeah. They equate it with religion and mm-hmm. religious really oppression of ideas.
Yeah.
But your point, the guy David Berlinski, who I mentioned, who's I think in France or something right now, he got his PhD from Princeton, has an interesting background. But he makes the point that, you know, Dawkins is really just a pop scientist, just like he's a pop speaker. He's a pop everything. He points out that you don't get the academic rigor that you expect from that side in figures like that, that they're really diving into specific details on this thing. They're kind of shooting from the hip. And not diving into it in the depth that you really want from a solid argument.
Yeah, he even calls him a lousy philosopher.
Yeah, and theologian. He doesn't have the theological tools to deal with these kinds of what he says are metaphysical arguments, and I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah, Berlinski was probably the most interesting of them all. The guy doesn't know how to sit in a chair straight. But he's just this casual guy, but I found him the most engaging and intelligent about it, and he was just speaking nonchalantly about some of these issues, but saying some very interesting and profound things, I thought. And he called it like it was.
He did.
And the fact that you're right. I mean, people get enraptured in Dawkins' arguments, and they're like, wow, this is amazing, but they're just bankrupt.
Yeah.
He's just a very poor philosopher. An atheist, an unbelieving philosopher, would be embarrassed by many of the things he says.
Yeah, that's right. Because they think they can deal with just the data of science without delving into these metaphysical questions. But the thing that they're actually attacking are metaphysical, theological, philosophical questions. So you need to be trained and have the vocabulary to deal with it on that level.
Yeah.
Not just in the lab.
Yeah.
So it really requires a lot of extra work outside just mere scientific data.
Overall, what do you think the value of this movie is? How would you use it? Is it worth watching? Is it worth recommending? And if so, who would you recommend it to?
Yeah.
And how would you use it? Or where would you show it?
I think piggybacking off what I said before, I think if you are just coming into the discussion of intelligent design and are not as familiar with the scientific questions that are out there and just want to be exposed to the kinds of issues that are being batted back and forth, this is a great intro for you. And, you know, with the provision that some of the things are not done maybe as well as you'd like it to on a production level, and that it does have a definite slant. If you go into watching it on that level, then you'll expect that. But just introducing you to a few concepts that I think are helpful, and then you can go do your own research, you know, on specific topics like origins and evolution in particular, things like that.
Yeah. What did you think, Jonathan?
My advice would be to anybody who watches the film is just before you watch the film, just remember that everybody is religious. Mm-hmm. Everyone is. The yeah. Christians, the non-Christians, the ID guys.
I perceive
the
that you are very religious.
Right. Yeah. Everybody has a religion. It's just some people don't want to call it a religion, but yeah. everybody has their heart set in a certain trajectory of worship, and it's either going to be, you know, pure rationalism and man's autonomous reason, or it's going to be, you know, the triune God of Scripture. And yeah, so, yeah. and you can see that how religious the quote-unquote irreligious people begin to act about ID being taught in schools. They yeah. hate it. It is just, it is to be anathema. Uh-huh. They begin to speak as if, they begin to preach. They begin to, you know, probably, you know, hope and, you know, yeah. urge each other on. They probably have spur groups on the weekends.
At least the clips that we saw, the clips that were included in the film, it was very vitriolic. Just that you're right, an anger and a hatred towards any question. The best we found in there was I forget the man's name, but the one guy said, well, yeah, they can have the freedom of speech. But he equated it with, yeah, well, they can be alongside all the people who are Holocaust deniers. They have right. the right to deny the Holocaust. They have the right to talk about that. Right. But they're just the same as all those kind of people. That is the best light that many of these opposing scientists put. He was the best or the most favorable right. of all these scientists in terms of their views towards people who hold to intelligent design.
Yeah.
So that goes to show just the antipathy. Right. towards mm-hmm. this very view and really what's behind it. And, you know, I'm not going to disagree with them. I think there is, you know, a religious agenda or a desire. Mm-hmm. It's not a pure desire for just an open discussion. Mm-hmm. We want that, but I must concede also, yeah, the desire for intelligent design is motivated by religious belief.
Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, Keller's point in action, you know, right. when he's talking about counterfeit gods, you know, science is definitely included in that. Yeah. You know, he was on Reform Forum a couple of weeks ago talking about this exact same thing. I think this is one example.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys are absolutely right. So the movie is expelled. No intelligence allowed. It is at least starring Ben Stein, and he has a major hand in producing it. Now, he is also interviewing several people from the Discovery Institute. We also wanted to mention an event coming up at Westminster Theological Seminary in March. If I can pull this up in front of me, I can read the info to you. It is a Science and Faith Friends or Foe. It's a big conference coming up in Westminster. They're in Glenside, Pennsylvania, March 12th through 13th, 2010. And the speakers, now this is interesting. If you hear about the speakers, it's got Vern Poitras, who has a PhD in New Testament. Oh, yeah. And a PhD in mathematics at yeah. Harvard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got you know, that. Yeah.
Same old story.
And also
everybody's
a degree
getting two PhDs.
In, you know, graduate studies in linguistics. Right. At the, you know, SIL, Summer right. Institute of Linguistics. So,
yeah. Typical guy. Typical.
Yep. 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 C. John Collins. John West, Jay Richards, Paul Nelson, Bruce Gordon, and one K. Scott Oliphant. So it should be an excellent conference, an excellent discussion on science and faith, friends or foes. I will put a link to this in the show notes. You don't want me to read you the link
right
on the air. But this is going to be a great discussion. Jared or Jonathan, could you tell us any more about this?
I don't have a lot of details right now. I will be there, definitely, but I'm looking forward to this. It's, you know, clearly I have a particular stance on it, but I'm looking forward to seeing the way that Poitras and, you know, Dr. Oliphant interact with these guys and talk about these issues. I haven't seen that before, so it'll be really, really interesting to see those guys interact.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the question and answer. A lot of the audience have probably heard a lot of the talks that are going to be given, but just to hear the questions that you know, usually come from a Westminster audience to guys that are probably doing some, you know, ID presentations.
Yeah. Like,
what are the, you know, there's going to be some penetrating questions.
And yeah, I think
no
so.
No rock unturned, which is what I'm excited about at Westminster.
And we have a prospective student day the day before, so they're probably going to stick around. And so it'll be interesting to see the kinds of questions of people pre-seminary and what they're thinking about maybe at the college level.
Wonderful.
And yeah, so it'll be a good mix of people, I think, at the conference. I'm excited for it.
Can you tell us something about the prospective student events and whatnot just as we close? Let me give you a platform for mentioning that because I think people would be interested to knowing if they're considering Westminster at all. What do you mean by they might stay over?
Good question. These are days, just one day really a month, February, March, and April, where we invite anyone and everyone who might have an interest in taking classes at Westminster to come to attend classes, to get one-on-one FaceTime with Westminster professors, to hear specific lectures towards whatever your interest is. You'll have lunch with staff. You'll meet with current students. So it's basically just kind of, it's almost like a Westminster pep rally in one day, just to get everyone to talk about what Westminster really offers. And that goes for the MA level, the MDiv, the PhD level. To get your exposure. Because, you know, I can talk till I'm blue in the face, but until you come on campus and really hear these professors talk about the things that you're interested in, that's really what matters. So it's just a foray to do that. And, you know, we put people up in a hotel around the corner and shuttle them around if they need to. So it's really a fun time. To get to know people.
And it seems more than a coincidence that it usually happens around these conferences and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Always enjoy the kind of extra Westminster things that are going on. Yeah. So, and we do too.
Yeah, one of the things we want to tell to the prospective students is, you know, the Westminster education has cool events like this, the science.
We're not just sitting in a
closed
door.
Don't be in an
hour. Right.
The science is in.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me, guys. I really appreciate you coming on and for recording these episodes with us. So always have a good time, and I know the listeners enjoy it when you two come over. So check this out, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. You can pick up the DVD from Amazon or whatnot. I'll put a link to it in the show notes so you can send Reform Forum a couple dollars by purchasing the movie. Or it's available on Netflix, actually streaming now. That's how I watched it. And it's also on iTunes you can rent. So if you have a Netflix account, just go online and you can hit play and watch it. If not, you can rent it from iTunes or buy it. Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. So thank you so much for listening to the Reform Forum. You can visit Westminster online at wts.edu. You can also visit the Reformed Forum at reformedforum.org. and get a link to all the things that we're doing, all the videos we're trying to put up, and all the blog posts, all the fun stuff that's available online. It's reformedforum.org. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us again next time on the Reformed Media Review.